Hello, I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's just about 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, March the 16th. And we will talk with a Wisconsin dad this hour, who's originally from Australia, who is part of an effort to change state laws to give divorced dads more rights and to allow fathers more involvement in the lives of their children. He's one of the organizers of the Wisconsin Fatherhood Conference, which starts today and continues tomorrow, right here in Madison. And I hope those of you who frequently call into this program to suggest that we do more on these issues, issues of equal rights for fathers, call in this hour to talk with our guest and to share your stories about why Wisconsin laws and Wisconsin courts, you think, deal unfairly when it comes to child placement and custody and related issues. And anyone else who has a question or a comment on the social and legal issues facing single dads or divorced dads, invited to call in, of course, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, toll free from anywhere. If you're in Madison, we ask that you call 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Peter Kerr from Grafton, Wisconsin. He moved here from Melbourne, Australia in 2000. He also walked across the state last fall to call attention to the plight of fathers and the laws that he says promote unequal parenting. And as I mentioned, he's one of the organizers of the Wisconsin Fatherhood Conference and will be attending the conference at the Sheraton Hotel in Madison later today and tomorrow. I'll give you more information on the conference a little bit later in the program. Good morning.
G'day, Joy. How are you doing?
You have not developed my Wisconsin accent yet.
I'm trying pretty hard not to.
So can you give us the basics of your story? You and your wife in 2000, your wife at the time in 2000, moved from Australia to Wisconsin.
And that's correct. Mm-hmm. My daughter was born in Australia, and we were living there at the time. And, you know, we are from two countries, Australia and America, so we decided to share the two countries over many years of, you know, what you hope and assume is going to be a happy marriage. Anyway, when we moved out here, pretty much as soon as residency was gained, I was given my marching orders. So I became an every second weekend and one night through the week father from that point on.
Yeah, well, why was the placement decided that way? Did you want more than that?
Well, you know, I'm 12,000 miles from home. My social network, family network and career network is a long way away from here, and, you know, it made life a bit difficult for me. But, you know, I wasn't living over here to be a visitor parent. I was living over here to be a father to my daughter. It was a pretty simple but pretty tough question I had to ask myself. Do I go back to Australia and participate with my family and friends there and abandon my daughter? Or do I live here to be a father she needs and somewhat abandon my friends and family? And, of course, I've chosen the latter. And I didn't choose that so that I could be an every second weekend parent. I didn't choose that so that I could be a minor parent. I chose that so I could fully participate in my daughter's life. And yeah, that's what I intend to do.
Yeah. So what's stopping you? I know I don't have children myself, and I'm married, but I know people who have had a divorce and they share custody of and placement of their child. How come that's not the situation for you?
Well, the best people to work out what's best for their children are the two parents. And, you know, I'd have to say the vast majority of situations where the parents separate, they do work it out themselves. I think when you respect your children, then you do work it out yourself. Unfortunately, the way the court system's set up today, it provides an advantage for one parent to go down that path. So if the courts did have a neutral position, therefore no advantage going there, people wouldn't go there and they'd work it out themselves. But occasionally you get a parent that doesn't want to agree and they want more than their fair share and they see that path down the family court, so off they go.
Yeah, you are quoted in a story that I found here calling the Wisconsin family courts the meat grinder. Why do you say that?
You know, my divorce lasted longer than my marriage, and going through the family courts certainly chews you up emotionally and chews you up financially. You know, there's a lot of suicide, sadly, that come out of family court and relationship breakup and severance with their flesh and blood bond. In my walk, unfortunately, there was one member that actually ran out the back and shot himself, which is rather sad to see and rather sad for the kids as well. But that's the type of stress and pressure cooker the family court puts on you. You know, in my own experience, I think my mother died in December of 2001 and my then wife filed for divorce on January 2002. So in the space of 6 weeks, I'd lost my mother and it looked like I was going to lose my wife and my child as well. And, you know, that puts a real fear into a father. And as there's some horror stories out there about what happens to fathers, and the standard cookie cutter in the courts is to give every second weekend and one night through the week. And really what that does is it hands the veto pen to the primary parent. And that means that, which is usually mothers, that means that if they really are angry and vindictive about their ex for the failure of the marriage, then they can use that veto pen for terrible and destructive causes in the relationship of their children.
We'll check our weather forecast and then continue talking with Peter Kerr, an organizer of the Wisconsin Fatherhood Conference, taking place today and tomorrow in Madison, where single fathers, family advocates, and others will gather for workshops and discussions about various legal and social issues facing single dads. And we will welcome your questions for him and maybe your own story of a child custody or placement situation. Why it is and why you don't think it's in the best interest of your child. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.
It's your views on the news today at 4 o'clock. And then after 5, the art of forgiveness. It can happen at home and around the globe when people understand it's not a sign of weakness to forgive. I'm Ben Marins, and it's At Issue Today, 4 to 6 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, March the 16th. It's At Issue with Ben Marins between 4 and 6 this afternoon. Ben's guest ever after 5 says that the art of forgiveness can be practiced at home and globally. And people need to understand it is not a sign of weakness. That's Ben Marins and his guest on forgiveness after 5 this afternoon. We're talking about father's rights and the legal and social issues facing fathers today, single fathers today, with a guest, Peter Kerr, who is one of the organizers of the Wisconsin Fatherhood Conference. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Peter Kerr, what is it about state law that is unfair to fathers when it comes to the placement of children following a divorce?
Well, there's two areas. There's custody and there's placement. And custody is the legal, and that's a presumption of joint custody. But, you know, it's really not worth the paper it's written on because it only details 5 areas. There's non-emergency medical care, which, you know, the majority of us are saying, yeah, sure, look after our kids well. There's getting a driver's license. Well, by the time the kids are 16, it's done. It's military service, which is about the same age. So the only other two are religion and education, and that's where a parent, both parents, supposedly have an equal say in it. But the real one is the placement. That's the time the child spends with you, bonding with you, watching you do the chores, helping you with the chores, having fun, all of the rest of the things that kids do with parents, and the times that parents can be role models for kids. So placement is the big issue.
Yeah, so the law that I'm looking at here that says the court shall presume that joint legal custody is in the best interest of the child is just a statement. It doesn't really...
It really doesn't have any day-to-day effect on what you do.
Yeah. Maybe it is in the best interest of the child, though, that that child stay primarily with the mother in certain circumstances because of geography, work. Every single situation would be different, I would think.
Oh, look, certainly it's going to be silly for an over-the-road truck driver to expect equal placement because he's just not there. But, you know, there's a lot of dads that are there and a lot of dads that want to be involved and, you know, they're knocking on the door and the door's not being opened. In my particular neighborhood, my two immediate neighbors are stay-at-home dads. And, you know, last time I went on a school excursion with my daughter, I was proud to see that other than the teachers, the 10 parents that attended to chaperone, 5 of them were men and 5 of them were women. So, you know, dads are out there. They want to be involved. And, you know, the laws or the judges are just not applying the law to allow the fathers to get in there and help with their kids.
We have lots of callers, but let me ask, what is the change in law, the assembly bill that you testified about last week? What would that do for this particular situation?
Well, Assembly Bill 29 is a bill that will change the law to allow the judge discretion in a future event. I mean, it's a good bill. It's a bill that unfortunately may be challenged, which means going back to court. You know, we don't want to be in court. It's a terrible place to be. But it is a bill that's playing around the edges a bit. What it actually says is if you can identify a future event like puberty or school starting or even personally clearing a drug and alcohol problem, that, you know, if you can jump these hurdles, then yes, the things change and the judge can rule that a different placement schedule can be set.
So right now, if a placement schedule is set, the judge would not say, but in 5 years, if you move to Grafton and get a steady job, we can change that and your daughter goes to school. Or I'm making these up.
Yeah, something like that. The rule for modification is it takes you 2 years to before you can have another go at it. And, you know, if the child's 5 when the ruling is being made and going to school next year, then the judge has the discretion to say, well, until school starts, it's every second weekend and one night through the week. And when school starts, it's going to be week on, week off. So a future event can influence the change in placement during that two-year period.
Well, we'll talk about this other bill you also testified about and some other things that are happening at the conference. But right now we have full lines, so let's go to the phones and take Laura in Madison first. Hi, Laura.
Hi. In the middle 80s, I went through a divorce, and though we tried for joint custody, I was awarded the sole custody of my kids. And it would seem that would back... you know, back you up on what you're alleging happens. But at the time, I was the kid's father. And that, I guess, belies what you're saying and says that, in fact, way back in the mid-80s, there were cases where fathers were awarded custody. And I think that the process that the family court used was very careful, very deliberate, and did have the interests of the kids at heart. I'm just not sure. I think where the system falls down is in support enforcement, because even though I was awarded support, they never followed up on it.
Laura, I know you're very open about your story, but if I'm understanding this correctly, at the time you were...
The kids. I am the kid's father, and I was... going through a divorce, my ex left me, and it was a terrible time, and court is no place to be, and the process is excruciating. Your life is held up under a microscope, and
you were going for joint
custody all the way up to the very end.
And the judge awarded you full custody.
When the gavel came down, that's how it turned out. Yeah. We were both stunned.
Yeah. Can you tell us why something? Was there something in your was your wife battling drug abuse or something like that?
No. But she didn't have a permanent address. She had missed some of her visitations.
Well,
things like that.
And a reaction, Peter Kerr, to that story.
I think that my main aim in this is to not go to the family court. It is a terrible place to be. It's an emotionally grinding place, and it's a financially devastating place. And, you know, although it's a lot of fathers that get every second weekend, there are some mothers too. And I don't think that's right either. I mean, a lot of times I try and talk about non-custodial parents, but, you know, the vast majority are fathers. You know, I think the best thing to do is for the parents to work out what's going on. Now, the minute you get an equal placement decision, that's about how long it should last, because really it's up to the parents to decide what in reality is best for the child. And I really don't have a problem if my daughter's doing Girl Scouts and that's on a Monday night every night. I don't have a problem if it makes sense for her to stay over her mother's every Monday night. Well, that makes it a 6-8 split, but that's fine, because in summer sailing comes along and she does a sailing course every Friday, Saturday, Sunday, then it reverses the other way, comes an 8-split to me. I mean, it really doesn't matter. When you have this hard-coded 5-9 split where dad's a parent, it sets up animosity between the parents. Whereas if you had an equal placement situation where neither parent gained advantage, you'll find the parents actually parent their children, and they do it pretty well.
Thank you, Laura. Roger in Lemira, I was hoping you would call. Go ahead.
I really appreciate this public radio doing these series because the law is, like Peter has said, and hello, Peter, it's good to hear your voice.
Good morning, Roger.
Good morning. It's good to see that more and more people are aware of this because I've been in this situation like Peter for 5 years, actually now for 7 years, and my four children, three of them are adults now. And I can't do it anymore.
Well, I'm sorry, Roger. Obviously very, very emotional. Another caller also called in, and I thought Roger, when he used to call in the past, would say that the courts were supposed to place equally, but you're saying that that's not the law. It's just the legal custody. It's not legal placement that the courts are to presume 50-50.
Correct. You know, the whole court process is the first time you go through it, it's bewildering. But, you know, after you've been through it a while, you get to understand how it works. I had a gentleman call me up the other day. He wanted to know whether he should take his custody to trial. The GAL had recommended a 5-9 split. The social worker had recommended a 5-9 split. And his own attorney was recommending taking that deal. Now, obviously, the attorney and the judge and the guardian ad litem, they all get together. So they decide even before you get to trial what's going to happen. And really, his attorney was encouraging to take the 5-9 deal, simply because it would save him another $10,000 going to trial. The case was already decided, yet he hadn't even had his day in court yet. So, you know, it's a standard cookie cutter every second weekend and one night through the week. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's obviously tearing Roger apart.
It is, and you know, a lot of people call me a father's rights activist, but I'm actually not. I have a daughter, and as she grows up and turns into an adult, which I hope she does successfully. I'm trying very hard for that. But she's going to have expectations of equality, fairness, and respect. So in the workplace today, we have laws that support that. But the only way we're going to teach equality and respect and fairness is to teach it in the home place, in the child's formidable learning years. There's no way known women will ever get equality in the workplace in reality if we don't start teaching it in the home place. And I have a daughter. I'm not doing this because I'm a male. I'm doing it because she should have those expectations, and they should be realized.
Yeah, and you are also doing this, and we only have a minute to go, because you think this is best for the child.
Correct. I mean, I'm 48. I've been around the world a few times, both geographically and emotionally. You know, it's not for me. It's for my daughter. She's the one that's going to expect that sort of thing. When Zach bounces on the trampoline 10 times, she knows it's fair for her to bounce 10 times. So, you know, for a judge to say mum gets 9 nights and dad gets 5 nights, you know, it's right in her face that equality is just not what it should be.
We're going to check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking with Peter Kerr, one of the organizers of the Wisconsin Fatherhood Conference, taking place today and tomorrow at the Sheraton Hotel in Madison. 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 now on this Friday morning, March the 16th. We're talking with Peter Kerr. He is one of the organizers of the Wisconsin Fatherhood Conference. He's attending the conference and will be presenting at the conference at the Sheraton Hotel in Madison. The conference goes on today and tomorrow. And I will try to find the number that you can call for more information. Here it is, 414-339-9675. There's also more information, I presume, on the website, wisconsinfathers.org. You can call us right now at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. And let's go right back to the phones to Steve in Oxford, who's been waiting. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning, and hello, Peter.
Good morning, Steve.
I'm with Wisconsin Fathers for Children and Families. We're one of the organizations that will be hosting the Fatherhood Conference. And my question has to do with the false allegations of domestic violence, which are so often used as a tactical weapon in custody battles. And my question for Peter is, how does he think that's going to affect, if the law presumes, comes to presume, equal placement, the fact that false allegations of domestic violence, which in my organization alone, we've done informal polls, and up to three-quarters of our members have reported that they have been victims of false allegations of domestic violence. Does he think that a presumption of equal placement will increase or decrease this the incidence of these false allegations?
Well, false allegations are certainly a big problem. Fortunately, it's nothing I've had to deal with personally, but I've got many phone calls from fathers that have. And that's the nuclear option. You know, when you want to really discredit someone, it's a false allegation. And, that can really sever the ties of a child-father relationship or a child-mother relationship, but that's pretty rare. You know, this is sort of one step at a time, I think. Equal parenting first, false allegations second, and then addressing the real needs of the child after that in financial terms. But, you know, I think if you take away the advantage in court and make it neutral, then parents won't go there. I would predict or hope that the decrease in false allegations would occur if equal parenting happened. You know, I just find it bamboozling that a person can be good enough to date, they can be good enough to marry, they can be good enough to conceive a child with, they can be good enough to be at the birth, but as soon as those divorce papers are filed, all of a sudden they're a domestic violence abuser or a child sexual abuser. There are lots of records out there, and I think it behooves the state to actually do an inquiry to find out how many child sexual allegations or domestic violence allegations occur not in divorce, and then compare them against the ones that happen when divorce is on. And I think you'll find that it's hugely swayed to the allegations that happen during divorce. And it's the nuclear option, and it's very sad because it's soul-destroying to the kids, and it's soul-destroying to the parent that they're made against as well. But I think equal parenting is going to take the heat out of the whole divorce issue because it'll be a known outcome. If two parents are fit and healthy, then if you want to take it down the family court path, don't bother because it's an equal placement outcome. Drugs, something like that, if there's real badness happening with a parent, okay, you might need the protection of the law to do that. But the vast majority of parents are good, fit, healthy parents, and we need to let the parents get on and parent their children. So let's not go down the family court path. Let's have equal placement as a known outcome where the playing field is level. There's no advantage to be made from going there, and let's put the parents back around the table where they should be to do what's best for their kids.
Thank you, Steve, for the call. Sean in Madison is next. Hi, Sean.
Hello. Hello, Peter. How are you?
Morning, Sean.
Good morning. When my wife and I separated, we were separated for a long time, but we also had two children as well. And when it came to it, the court said, well, because I was a truck driver and I was traveling all over the U.S., and the court said, well, here's what you need to do to get custody of your kids, because my wife at the time had sexual contact with a 15-year-old, and so the kids had to go away. So I came off the road. I found myself in a steady job. I came off for over a year. Income was great. Everything was good. Well, then the courts came around to me and said, well, you need to go take this psycho evaluation. Okay, fine. So I went and did that. Well, meanwhile, the attorney that I had, who was in Missouri, and I lived here in Wisconsin, and I was constantly talking back and forth with him, and then all of a sudden he'd tell me, oh, everything's fine. Everything's, same way it was before. Well, come to find out, he wasn't doing his job. He wasn't relaying a lot of things to me that I needed to know or even, to do on my part. And then social services were, of course, trying to return the children to the mother, which also put pressure on me. But when it was all said and done, they took the children and gave them to somebody else other than me.
Well, I suppose let me ask this question. Do you think that the courts and the court process did what was in the best interests of your children?
No, because I felt that they could have been with me because I was a very well good provider for them, and I took care of them when they were around, even though I wasn't at home. But I made it a point to always constantly come and see them. And when I came off the road, I mean, I pretty much raised them when they were kids or babies. I mean, I was off the road and everything, and they started growing up, and then I had to come back on the road. But I think what the courts did was not in the child's best interest.
You know, I agree. There's an amazing amount of disrespect that goes on out there for fathers in the family court. You know, last December when I was presenting at the Wisconsin Chief Executives and Administrators meeting, every single point on the agenda was all about how their budgets were overstretched in family services. They couldn't pay for the jails that were expanding at a huge rate. I mean, everything that was falling apart in the counties all had to do, basically, with fathers not being in kids' lives. And I'm surprised taxpayers aren't jumping up and down and saying, you know, we've got to put kids' dads back together so that the kids aren't running wild, because it's costing our community a fortune. You know, I just don't understand why the courts keep making fathers visitors, or, you know, and there's mothers out there as well. I don't understand why only 2% of cases that are decided in the family court are decided for an equal placement. Everything else is an unequal placement. Part of the walk I did, I asked the hard questions as I walked 800 miles across Wisconsin, and that I couldn't find anyone out of the thousands that I spoke to, shook their hand, looked them in the eye, received emails and phone calls from. There was not one person that could answer me in the positive of this hard question. How, in an adversarial court, which is what a family court is, where a mother and father are pitted against each other, to sling mud at each other, and the outcome is a known unequal placement schedule where the mother becomes the gatekeeper and the father becomes the visitor. How is that in the best interest of the child? Yeah. And I couldn't find one person to answer me in the positive.
Maybe it happens so much that it's unequal placement because it is disruptive to a child to spend 1 week at dad's and 1 week at mom's, and it just has their life living suitcase to suitcase.
True, but I think as Sean showed, I mean, dads jump through hoops. They change their jobs, they move close to their kids, they get in the school district, they get a house with suitable accommodation, because all of that's hard. You go from a single house to dual houses, dual toys, dual beds, dual everything, and it's expensive. But there are an awful lot of dads out there that are jumping through the hoops to beg for scraps of time with their kids. And when they do get set up to be the parent they want to be, the courts still aren't recognizing them as fathers and important in their children's lives.
Yeah, we'll take Jen in Manitowoc. Hi, Jen.
Hi. Good morning, Peter.
Morning, Jen.
I'd like to thank you for the work you're doing, because I've seen it in my own life that it's so often that the father's importance in the child's life is just so minimalized. And when they want to be there, and they can't be there because they don't have the court order to have 2 weekends in a row. You know, the mother said, gee, you know, you get every other weekend, you get the one day a week, because a lot of times she's worried she's not going to get the child support she was awarded if she gives away more time.
You know, we may not be able to. Let me take our weather break, and then let's talk about the child support issue after that. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Talking with one of the organizers of the Wisconsin Fatherhood Conference today and tomorrow in Madison, an event that will deal with legal and social issues that single fathers face. Peter Kerr, our guest. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 13 minutes before 7 o'clock. Coming up after 7, it's March open line time. We want to know what's on your mind and what issues and guests you would like to hear on this program. Let's talk, Peter Kerr, about the issue raised by our last caller, Jen in Manitowoc, who I think was hinting that sometimes moms might want more of the placement so they would have more child support money. Is that really a reason?
Well, it certainly is one of the reasons. And, you know, there are some dads out there that want to try for equal parents just to decrease their child support. But, you know, that's very minor. There are very few. Most dads love their kids and just want to go fishing with them, teach them to ride a bike, etc. But child support is a big issue. You know, some mothers do see it as mother support, not child support. And really, I mean, it is the child's money. So if mum goes and buys a new pair of shoes with the child's money, in my opinion, that's stealing where I come from. That's taking away from what that child could potentially use for college. You know, another part of the money issue is all of the money made by the attorneys. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, the divorce industry. So, you know, I don't want to get too far into it because it's such a hot button, child support. But let me just say, my daughter's favorite color is rainbow. And I think that's a wonderful color. And it's what I tend to believe child support is. It's a rainbow of needs the child has. It's not just a financial issue. It's an emotional issue, a developmental issue. It's a riding the bike issue, a doing the homework issue. It's taking clearing the table, the dishes back there. You know, child support covers a lot of areas, but unfortunately, in our state, it's only seen as a financial need. And I think that's very wrong.
It's not a child support, I don't think, but there's a bill dealing with maintenance or alimony that you also testified about last week?
Correct. And the Supreme Court came down, I think it's Stanton versus Stanton in 1975, 32 years ago, that actually said, you know, no longer is it the realm that mum's in the house and dad's the breadwinner. You know, there are opportunities today out in the workplace where both parents can equally participate in both breadwinning and caregiving. So, you know, maintenance is there. And I think also with the property settlement changes that happened back in 1987, you know, if mum does put dad through college and he becomes a doctor and becomes very wealthy, well, the family unit becomes very wealthy. And if divorce happens, then she's going to get a pretty hefty slice of the property settlement anyway. So the days of maintenance, I think, are numbered. If maintenance does occur, I think it's a necessary thing where it's deemed that way. But really, you know, maintenance for 5 years means that the left behind partner as such can still use that maintenance to go out and get themselves a college degree to stand on their own two feet. Because after all, the definition of separation is I want greener pastures, I want to stand on my own two feet. And I think that maintenance should provide that, but not a forever category, because forever can just be used as a weapon against the other parent in a vindictive fashion.
Yeah, what would this bill change about the maintenance laws in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, I think the bill's a good bill, but it's not quite the right bill yet. It actually states that maintenance can only qualify for maintenance after 15 years. And, you know, someone who's been married for 14 years, I think, deserves to be considered as well. But certainly today, the judge has the discretion of deciding whether it's a long-term marriage or a short-term marriage. So maybe that's an amendment that could help there. But, you know, maintenance shouldn't go on forever. I mean, you receive an amount that's going to get you on your feet, allow you to do a college degree full-time or something like that. But then after you're on your feet, you should be responsible for your own actions and be accountable for those. So maintenance should not go on forever.
Yeah. And if I'm reading this correctly, it also would stop maintenance if the party moved in with somebody else in a non-marital living together situation.
Correct. Yeah. You know, the births to single mothers in Wisconsin is 31% and in Milwaukee is 50%. So there's a lot of cohabitating going on, even though if it's just for one Saturday night. But I think, you know, these days marriage isn't as popular as it used to be. And if one partner is living with another, with their new partner, then yeah, they've got household income, just as if they were married, common law marriage mm-hmm. as it might be. So yeah, I think if that occurs, then maintenance should be looked at again, if not stopped.
All right, back to the phones. Tom in Eau Claire. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Yeah, Peter, the question I had was, first of all, I was a little bit unclear with regard to the area of placement. What the actual law reads seems to be a little bit different than what I'm hearing you say. I haven't been back in court for about 3 years. I currently have a situation where I have equal placement for both of my sons. One son is 20 now, so he no longer is involved. But the second son still has equal placement, and he doesn't really look at the situation of equal placement as jumping back and forth between two households, as though he's deprived of something. The way I see it, he seems to be very emotionally healthy, and he sees as though not that he has two part-time houses, but it's two full-time houses. He seems to really enjoy and delight in the fact that he has two places where he's loved, and he has very supportive parents. So I see equal placement as very healthy for him. And I guess I was a little confused because of the law that has, how I had read it, was that the law seems to encourage, in this language, full time as much as possible with each parent, but the judges are interpreting it to mean something other than what it's intended.
That's correct. You know, the judicial application of today's laws is not as it should be. The laws today state maximize in there, and really the judiciary, they simply continue to hand out the standard cookie cutter every second weekend and one night through the week. It's a 5-9 split, and every single father that calls me for help or a cry on the shoulder or something like that always ends up with the 5-9 split. Now, Landwehr versus Landwehr last year that went all the way to the Supreme Court was to have the Supreme Court define what maximize means. And basically, the Supreme Court just threw it out, which in one way is a good thing. The Supreme Court interpreted the laws that it is once placement is set, you are to maximize your time. So therefore, once every second weekend and one night through the week is set, then I'm to maximize my time within that. Now, what does that mean? That I can't go playing golf on my weekend? That's a silly interpretation of it. But I think the good thing out of that is that the Supreme Court threw it back to the legislator and said, your language just doesn't work. We've interpreted that way. So you need to rewrite your language if you're really going to have any teeth in this.
All right. So current law, though it might be rewritten, does state that the courts should try to maximize the time the child spends with each of the parents.
Correct.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not the way the Supreme Court interpreted. And I live 14 houses from my ex-wife. I mean, there's no reason that I couldn't handle more than a 5-9 split. But for some reason, maximizing doesn't mean equalizing.
I get it. All right. Thank you very much, Tom. Steve and Lion, hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. I have a daughter who's turning 7 on Father's Day this year. And I've never seen her until last September, briefly at a powwow here at Genoa City. She doesn't know who I am naturally. Her mother has avoided me. I have sold everything that I had, where 2 years of those 7, I was living in my vehicle trying to get visitation or some kind of contact with my daughter. We were never married. Is there any hope for me? Should I come to this conference? Do you think there's a chance? I mean, I've run out of avenues. I had Jeffrey Loving in Chicago working on the case in the beginning, and he's very expensive, and I was flat broke and have been for the most part of these 7 years. Should I just give up? And like most attorneys tell me, why don't you just give up, go meet another woman, get married, have a kid? You know, they're all the same, and I don't believe that.
You never give up. You never give up. I'm 12,000 miles from home, and I will never give up. People call me stubborn. My father called me tenacious. I'm not sure which one it is. But no, you never give up. And you never give up because your kids need you. That's why. They're flesh and blood. They carry your genes. They carry your chromosomes. You never give up.
I want to be part of her life, and I believe that we do. Listen to some of what you're saying. It's giving me hope, and other things you're not giving me any hope. And that's because of the government, naturally, the way the laws are written. And but I don't know. Should I come up to this conference this weekend? And I mean, do you think there's hope for somebody who was never married to the person? And
you know, I think, I'd like to see you there. That'd be terrific. There's certainly other dads in your situation, and there's certainly dads that are broken through. So interesting to hear what happens to the others. Maybe there's some things you can do that you never thought of. Continuing in your child's life is all just a matter of creativity. And whether that means you get all your friends to write a postcard to say, hi, Daddy still loves you. I mean, there's just such a number of ways that you can do things that only a creative mind can do.
We have time for one more caller, Aaron in Egg Harbor. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I'm a father, single father, divorced since 98. At first, I had one day with my children. Actually, at first, I couldn't see them at all. Luckily, I had a very intelligent judge who could see what my ex-wife was doing. And every time she took me to court for supposedly doing something wrong, the judge gave me more placement. Until now, I have equal placement, week on, week off, and it's really fantastic for my kids. They love it. I love it. And it gives them a chance to be with the normal parent more often.
Well, Aaron, thank you for the call. We have less than a minute to go, Peter Kerr, so sometimes it works out.
Look, that's terrific. I'm just sad that you had to go through the pain of those lost years until it was realized that equal parenting is the right place to be, and it enables parents to get on with what they should be doing, and that's parenting. You know, we need to take the vindictiveness out of the family court, and we need to make family court neutral so that there's no advantage in either parent going there. And the only way we can do that is by the laws and the legislature.
Well, if our callers are any indication, you'll have a big turnout for your conference today and tomorrow.
I hope so. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be an exciting time. In the summit in Milwaukee we had back in October, there was 1,200 fathers that turned up out of an expected 300. So yeah, we were overflowing. Fathers are on the move.
Thank you very much for being with us. Peter Kerr, organizer of this Wisconsin Fatherhood Conference. More information at 414-339-9675. This is the Ideas Network.